more or less a continuation of a talk that I gave last year at the PDS on the Sphere. This is now a final, very mature version of a test case that I would like to propose as a standard test case for dynamical course. Just briefly an overview of my talk. I will just give you the basic idea, just briefly, how can you derive such a test case, how can you develop it. I show the initial data sets to you. It will be a test case that just relies on initial data sets. It's a test case for dynamical cores, so that, of course, means no physics are involved. It's a dry test case with prescribed orography. You just specify initial data, you let it run, that's it. So it's really easy to apply. You will see that in a minute. I talk a little bit about the characteristics of initial data sets. There are some stability, instability mechanisms that you should be aware of. Talk about the test strategy and a lot of results. Well, the basic idea or my goals when I worked on that, the goal was to develop a test case for dynamical core, without physics and dry. The requirements that I wanted to fulfill, easy to apply, so everybody, would really want to use it. It should be idealized, but it should be as realistic as possible, and you will see that the initial state resembles the real atmosphere. You could maybe compare it to a winter hemisphere. It gives you quick results. It's not like Halsorarus that you let run over, thousands of days. It's a 30-day run that you have to perform, and that can be done within a couple of hours normally, depending on the resolution. It starts from analytic initial conditions. So everybody, each grid can be covered, this test case can be easily applied to any grid because you just rely on the longitude and the latitude, and you can compute your initial conditions analytically, and it triggers the evolution of a baroclinic wave. And that is actually the second step of the test suite. The first step I will show to you in a minute. It's designed, and that's really important here, it's designed for primitive equations with pressure-based coordinates, vertical coordinates. And it cannot be applied to a system with a z-coordinate like you have, Terry. And I looked at that, but I couldn't find the solution to it. It doesn't matter which kind of pressure-based coordinate system. It can be a pure pressure system, can be a sigma system, or a hybrid, whatever you have. But it needs to be a pressure system. So when you run your model, when you have your primitive equation model, you need to specify five initial conditions. This is UVT, of course, the normal fields, then the surface pressure, and the orography field. The requirement here is that we want to find a steady state balanced initial solution to the primitive equations. How do we do that? Well, we have a couple of choices that we can make, and we need to derive a couple of things. The choices here are we choose the wind speeds and we choose the surface pressure. That's up to me or up to you. I show you what I chose in a minute, but in case you choose these, you then can plug these into your primitive equations and you derive the balanced initial data set based on that. And here's how you do it. Here, for example, this is the momentum equation for V. Okay, want to have a steady state? Okay, just set that to zero. Set the pressure to a constant pressure, so this goes away. The terms that are more or less now on the board are, just the metric term. Here's the gradient of phi and, of course, the Coriolis term. And you can solve that system analytically in case you have a good choice for your wind speeds. You get the geopotential, and this needs to be, or you need to have that in order then to calculate orography at the ground. You can further take that geopotential field, you plug it into your hydrostatic equation, and you get a solution for T, and that gives you your temperature field. I don't show you actually the whole equation. It's long, but it's analytic. I just show you figures, and you see how the initial data look like. I chose the meridional wind speed, V. I chose zero, which needs to be done. And Terry points that out in order to get a solution of that system. And I chose 1,000 hectopascal for the pressure. And then you get, this is actually my choice. I chose this zonal wind field, when maybe people remember that I talked about that last year. Last year I had a similar wind field, but just one jet over the equator. Now it really looks like the atmosphere. We have two jets here in the mid-latitudes, and the strength is 35 meters per second. So actually, that's more or less a climate state when you average, a zonal average. And of course, this is zonally symmetric. This is the solution for your orography. It's the surface geopotential that you need to specify in your model in order to get the balanced initial state. Here is the initial data set for the temperature. And well, this is, of course, a little bit condensed, so I plotted, you know, another temperature profile here with a logarithmic scale. You see, I resembled a stratosphere, I resembled a mesosphere, and you can actually, you know, it doesn't matter at which height your model top is, you just have a nice profile and it won't blow up, whatever. Here, in this case, here, for example, this is the pole point, you have a slight inversion layer, this is the latitude, the black line, and here's the equator, the right line. This, again, resembles a climatic state. It's a little bit hot, maybe, at the equator, a little bit cool at the pole, but it's quite reasonable. The data set you just saw has a couple of properties. First, we want to trigger baroclinical stability, so we actually have a baroclinically unstable initial data set. Of course, baroclinic instability, that needs to have vertical wind shear, and you saw that in my zonal wind field. That will be enough. So actually, the vertical wind shear is on the order of 25 meters per second when you compare the ground and the wind at 200 hectopascal. That will be enough to trigger baroclinic instability pretty quickly. In addition, it's barotropically unstable. You can show that if you compute or when you look at the normal barotropic instability criterion. I don't show it here, but it's barotropically unstable, but it's stable with respect to three other instability mechanisms. And these are the static instability, the inertially instability, and the symmetrically instability. And just want to prove that more or less when I show you the data you can look at in order to assess whether your initial data set is stable or unstable with respect to the certain instability mechanisms. Static instability, of course, look at the potential temperature, or better, of course, not just potential temperature, it's a gradient of the potential temperature, and you can you can look at, for example, Brandt-Weiseler frequencies, and here in this case, the Brandt-Weiseler frequency is positive everywhere. That just shows you it's statically stable everywhere and won't blow up on you. Two other stability mechanisms. Inertial stability, be reminded that the horizontal stability instability mechanism. Here, the absolute vorticity is positive in the northern hemisphere, it's negative in the southern hemisphere. That just shows you that it's inertially stable everywhere. And here is the symmetric stability. Again, be reminded that the slant-wise instability mechanism, when you perturb your field in the slant-wise direction, not in a pure horizontal or pure vertical direction, look at the potential vorticity. Here it's in PV units, whatever that is, it, you know, doesn't matter. Just shows you, in case you have a potential vorticity field that is positive, here in the northern hemisphere it's negative, in the southern hemisphere it shows you it's symmetrically stable. So the only two instability mechanisms are the baroclinic instability and the barotropic instability. Okay, how does the test work? I just showed you the initial conditions. Again, these can be computed analytically. Each grid can be applied. Step one, initialize your model with the balanced initial data set. Let it run over, let's say, 30 days, and look what happens. Nothing should happen. It's a solution to the primitive equation. Everything that happens has or is due to, for example, truncation error or whatever you have, or maybe a problem in the model. That's the first step. It's easy to apply, and you might wonder what we saw. You think, you know, your model runs fine, but you see all kinds of surprises at this point. And that's easy to do. Step two, I propose that after step one, of course, again, take the initial conditions, but now perturb them slightly. And here I perturb them, over a certain width, and this width is actually on the order of 3,000 kilometers. So it's well-resolved. It's a well-resolved perturbation. And for example, at the T42 resolution, you actually have, 13 grid points that will cover a perturbation like that. So it's a well-resolved perturbation. Maybe people remember that last year I introduced a grid point perturbation, a single grid point perturbation, and we turned that down. So a well-resolved perturbation, and here it's a zonal wind field. And think of the Gaussian Hill perturbation, more or less. So you take your initial zonal wind field and you add such a hill with the amplitude of 1 meter per second at a certain position to your wind field, and then again initialize your model and let it run. And let it run maybe for 30 days again. And this will trigger the evolution of a baroclinic wave. And you will see that after a couple of days. First, it needs to organize itself. And I show you in a couple of slides, I show you a movie, how the baroclinic instability looks like. So we had the initial conditions, and we had a couple of models at our disposal. This was a nice test setting here. I accessed, or I took the newest version of the NCAR suite, which is the so-called COM2 framework. This model framework has three dynamical cores in it. These are the Eulerian dynamical cores, the semi-Lagrangian dynamical cores. These are two spectral models. And now, you know, it's fairly new. Now there is a third model. It's a finite volume dynamical core that has been developed at NASA. And Kevin Yeh actually does work in that field. The fourth model is the German Weather Service model. This model, again, is completely different. And Thomas already mentioned that. It's based on an icosahedral grid, so it's a triangular grid structure. It's a grid point model. So you have a variety now of models that you can look at, and we have a variety, or we have actually a lot of results that give you lots of information. I just show you some highlights. We have so many plots. Please, if you want to see more, I can easily provide you with more. These are highlights, snapshots, basically. We have runs at different resolution. The highest resolution run is T170. It's approximately, when you think of a degree range, it's approximately half a degree, maybe a little bit more than that. And then we coarsen the resolution, and T21, that's the coarsest resolution that we have. So I have four different resolutions, four models. The vertical distribution is always the same. It's 26 hybrid levels. A couple of transparencies now that show you the balanced initial state. So remember, the initial data set should be constant when you initialize your model with it. Let it run for 30 days. Nothing should happen. Well, this is the finite volume dynamical core, which is part of NCAR suite. Here you see three different resolutions, and this is the L2 error norm of the surface pressure. The definition of the L2, it's a normalized norm, so it's based on Dave's publication, the 92 standard data set for the standard test case set for the shallow water equation. What we see here, this is the coarsest resolution, and here we have the final resolution, and that's 30 days. We see some gravity wave activity, and that's due to the fact that Terry already mentioned. We have an analytical solution to the primitive equation, but of course we have a discretized model, and the analytical solution is not a perfect solution to the discretized model, but it's very, very close. And we see that we actually have gravity wave activity, but it should not really disturb our initial state, and it should stay stable despite this small gravity wave activity. Actually, we see it here quite nicely. Here, over time, the gravity waves get smaller and smaller, and this can be run for, well, I ran for 30 days, but this can be run for, you know, maybe 100 days or longer, and nothing should happen. Well, the other models showed a different picture. Again, this is L2 error norm. This is the same picture, basically, that you saw before with the finite volume dynamical core. Now, here we have three different models. This is the semi-Lagrangian anchor model, the Eulerian, and the finite volume core again. Now, you know, the scale is different. What we see here that there is this increasing curve. That is the semi-Lagrangian dynamical core. And we have here something that looks like an accumulation of error, whatever that is. We don't actually know, but we suspect that there might be a problem in the semi-Lagrangian core at the moment. The Eulerian is just fine. The Eulerian is just at the same level as we saw before, and it looks like the finite volume dynamical core. And we have, again, we have this, you know, gravity wave activity in the Eulerian dynamical core as well, but it does not disturb the initial state, and it stays stable for a long time. And here's a problem that we actually saw with the semi-Lagrangian dynamical core earlier, and that plot was produced by Dave, and that is half a year ago, I think, or it's half a year old. Here you see a problem, and that's a problem that actually you mentioned, Terry. Here, this is the zonal wind field. It's a zonal average. It's of course zonal symmetric, the initial state, and here the different colors show you the different days. Again, we have a 30-day run, and what we see here over time, we see a loss in amplitude. Nothing else, just a loss in amplitude. This is a problem, or was a problem, in the semi-Lagrangian core, and then Dave and other people looked at that and fixed that. It's now no longer this case. It's now still losing a little of the amplitude, but not as much as this. Well, just briefly, I think it has to do with the way the trajectories were computed in the semi-Lagrangian dynamical core. Such an error has not been caught by other methods. When you have a complete climate run, you did not see that because you have so many other things that are going on, especially when you add the physics, you won't see that. And this test case was a test case that actually showed that there might be a problem in this code. And we have another, I wouldn't call it problem, but we have another effect. Again, this is the balanced initial state. Nothing should happen when you integrate it. And here I show you something that happens, and that is here the model of the German Weather Service. Remember, it's an icosahedral grid. It has a built-in wave number 5 structure, and it's a relatively low-level numerical scheme. Low-level, that means the second order or less. And that's what we see. We see accumulation. Well, we see a truncation error here, a truncation error that has a wave number 5 structure due to the special design of that model. And that popped up here, for example, in the meridional wind field. At a relatively coarse resolution here, I indicated that, think of that as T42. And this is day one. And wave number 5, when you look at that, in the atmosphere is unstable. Wave number 5 will grow. Actually, such a model like the GME does not stay stable. But I wouldn't really, and Dave and I, we talked about that, we don't really call it a problem because when you increase, for example, the horizontal resolution, this truncation error, this gets smaller and smaller, which we expect. And it's a model that is developed or is applied for weather forecasting purposes. It's a 10, maybe 12-day forecast, so it's actually not a problem for an operational mode. But it's there. And yeah, Francis? No. The finite volume? Well, third order scheme. And the finite volume core does not have this symmetric property. It's a regular grid, regular longitude-latitude grid. Actually, Amé and Steve and Rich Loft at NCAR, they have another model which is built on a cubed sphere. A cubed sphere has a built-in wave number 4 structure, but they have a really high-order scheme. The numerical method is on the order of, well, 6th order, 8th order, and they did not have a wave number 4 problem. Well, after 30 days, you saw something, but it was something that did not grow on day or at day 1 or 2. This grows quite quickly. After 10 days, you have a well-developed system here. Again, this diminishes when you increase the resolution. I want to show you a movie because I want to show you how the baroclinic instability looks like. Everything you saw before is the steady state. Okay, a little bit boring maybe after a while. So we now perturb it, and again we perturb it with the zonal wind field with an amplitude of 1 meter per second. And I walk you through that a little. I need to change the scaling quite often because I show you the pressure field, the surface pressure field. I start with 1,000 hectopascal. That's day zero. And I now show you a couple of single time steps, and this is a 6-hour interval. So after 6 hours, you get the first glimpse of the perturbation. The perturbation was actually introduced here at 40 north, 20 east, 3,000 kilometers wide, approximately, and that is after 6 hours. We are still, you know, close to 1,000 hectopascals, so nothing really has happened. It will take a couple of days before that gets organized. Here's the eighth hour. We see, well, that's just a characteristic of a spectral model. It's the Eulerian dynamic record that I show you. Of course, it's a spectral global model, so we actually see the global structure, although the perturbation is a local perturbation. But this is the first response of the spectral model to the perturbation. Well, yeah, small scale gravity waves. Not all the models show the global response. No, the finite volume dynamic core shows a local response. No. Not that quickly and not at that amplitude. Oops. This is after 16 hours. This is after 20. Oh, well, we see, you know, something happening now here. It starts growing, but fairly small. And that is now after 1 day. And I now change the scaling. So you actually now will see the next 5 days. And it's still small up to day 6. Okay, that's just the scaling has changed. You see the label bar there. And now you see a little movie, and that will go up to day 6. And you saw, of course, we have a westerly flow, and you saw that the perturbation is transported within the westerly flow, and it starts growing. It's still small, and I show you the scale here. It's still small, so it's on the order, 999 hectopascal or up to 1,002. And now it really kicks in. So now after 6 days and up to day 10, it's really explosive cyclogenesis. And I show you the next 4 days up to day 10. Again, I change the scaling here. And this is day 10. This is 930 hectopascal. This is 1,025. So that is actually the range now. And you see how the baroclinic wave has developed. And in a minute, I show you, in addition to just the pressure field, the temperature field, you see strong temperature fronts, everything that you see in a baroclinic wave setting. Strong warm advection, cold advection, and so forth. Now the next 10 days are more or less a mature system. But still, it's confined to the northern hemisphere, and that's day 20. And now, after day 20, after day 20, then you start seeing something in the southern hemisphere, and that is day 20 up to day 30. And now, after 30 days, you have more or less a fully developed system. So that's the whole characteristic of the baroclinic wave. So, wrap up more or less. I show you a couple of results now for the baroclinic wave. Here, the picture that you saw earlier, it's actually day 9. We have the pressure system well developed, but in addition here, that the color represents temperature, and here we see strong temperature gradients, a strong developed temperature front in addition to the system. So what can we actually say about that, or how can we assess it? What kind of diagnostics are available to assess such a system? And we have a couple of suggestions here. This is, again, an error norm. It's the L2 error norm. And here we compare, different resolutions of the same model, which is the Eulerian model, or we can compare now our four different models at the highest resolution possible. That gives us an estimate of the uncertainty of the solution. And what we see here, for example, here we have the four models, and we subtract the highest resolution from each other, and here is the temperature at 850 hectopascal. So we actually see that three of the models fairly agree, and the semi-Lagrangian does not. So this is one result that we got. So three out of four show a similar solution, which we might call at some point reference solution, but not at this point. But we see a similar development within three different models. But we also see that we maybe can predict day 10, but beyond day 10, the error grows, and at some point, the states are randomly related and can no longer be predicted. I think that's a predictability issue. So after 10 days, 12 days, maybe at maximum, we no longer can have a good reference solution here. Another way to look at that, and that's more or less the same answer, we have here the minimum surface pressure up to day 10. It's really located in that baroclinic wave that you just saw. Again, the semi-Lagrangian diverges slightly. The other three models fairly agree. Of course, such a figure don't tell you anything about a phase shift. That is just the global minimum pressure. The phase shift might be still possible, and I'll just show you that we have a small phase shift here. This is the finite volume core. I want to compare it to the German Weather Service model. This is just the state at day 9. This is a difference to the German Weather Service model at day 9. And there is something at day 9 that, you know, suggests a slight phase shift. Maybe the speed at which the baroclinic instability develops is slightly different. It will become different after day 10, definitely. Another way to look at results, that is kinetic energy spectrum. And here's the highest resolution that we have here for the Eulerian dynamical core. Here we have a spherical wave number. We clearly see the most unstable wave number. It's wave number 11 in the spherical space. It will be, or it is wave number 8 for the planetary wave number, which I don't show you. But the most unstable wave number grows the fastest. And after whatever, 10, 15 days, you know, every wave number pops up. But here the most unstable is what we see, and here we compare the most unstable one, and here you see all four models again at the highest resolution possible. This is wave number 9. And, this is not wave number 9. These are all the models and at day 10. And again, we see, when you can see the colors, that three models fairly agree, which is, again, Eulerian, finite volume, and GME, and the semi-Lagrangian is the outlier here. Another way to look at results, and this is the mean zonal wind field. Well, fairly different, yes. This is Eulerian, this is the German Weather Service model. Interesting to see here that Eulerian does not have any development. The zonal mean does not change over the 30 days. The same result is true for the finite volume dynamical core. It's not true for the semi-Lagrangian, and it's not true for the German model. The German model, remember, has a wave number 5 here at the highest resolution possible. It grows slowly, but ultimately it grows, and it grows in the southern hemisphere as well. So this structure is due to wave number 5 that ultimately grew. I think I have two more slides here. I proposed a test case to you. It's basically a test suite consisted of the balanced initial state. And then in addition to that, we perturb the balanced initial state and we have a baroclinic wave test case. We saw that even the steady state is quite powerful, that we can detect at least bugs in our codes. We saw in the baroclinic wave test that we get convergence with resolution. We maybe should actually increase the resolution further. T170 might not be enough, but whatever we call reference state, it might get there. 3 out of 4 models agreed fairly well, up to day 10. After day 10, it's no longer predictable, and at some point they're randomly related. And I consider it a powerful test suite that's really easy to apply. And my last transparency, that is something I'm actually working on. And the whole test case idea was based on, well, more or less another project that I work on, and that has to do with adaptive grids that got already mentioned. I actually wanted to have a test case for adaptive grids, and this will be a model, and this will be something I will use next year, or, well, the end of this year. And we have, actually, this will be based on the finite volume dynamic core developed at NASA, and we will introduce local refinements here that are part of such a block structure. That's just a brief outlook what I maybe talk about next year. And that's it.